Disc 11.
We slept in war gear. Or rather, men tried to sleep when they were wearing leather or mail, with sword belts buckled, helmets and weapons close. And we lit no fires, for Odda did not want the enemy to see that we were readied for battle. But the enemy had fires, and our sentries could watch down the slopes and use the enemy's light to look for infiltrators. None came. There was a waning moon sliding in and out of ragged clouds. The Danish fires ringed us, heaviest to the south by Canticton, where Guthrum camped. More fires burned to the east beside the Danish ships, the flames reflecting off the gilded beast heads and painted dragon prows. Between us and the river was a meadow, at the far side of which the Danes watched the hill, and beyond them was a wide stretch of marsh, and at the marsh's far side was a strip of firmer land, beside the river where some hovels offered the Danish ship guards shelter. The hovels had belonged to fishermen, long fled, and fires were lit between them. A handful of Danes paced the bank beside those fires, walking beneath the carved prows, and I stood on the ramparts and gazed at those long, graceful ships and prayed that Wind Viper still lived. I could not sleep. I was thinking of shields and Danes and swords and fear. I was thinking of my child that I had never seen, and of Ragnar the Fearless, wondering if he watched me from Valhalla. I was worrying that I would fail the next day when at last I came to the life gate of a shield wall. And I was not the only one denied sleep, for at the heart of the night, a man climbed the grassy rampart to stand beside me, and I saw it was Elderman Odda. "How do you know Ubba?" he asked. "I was captured by the Danes," I said, "and was raised by them. The Danes taught me to fight." I touched one of my arm rings. "Ubba gave me this one." "You fought for him?" Odda asked, not accusingly, but with curiosity. "I fought to survive," I said evasively. He looked back to the moon-touched river. "When it comes to a fight," he said, "the Danes are no fools. They will be expecting an attack at dawn." I said nothing, wondering whether Odda's fears were changing his mind. "And they outnumber us," he went on. I still said nothing. Fear works on a man, and there is no fear like the prospect of confronting a shield wall. I was filled with fear that night, for I had never fought man to man in the clash of armies. I had been at Esk's Hill, and at the other battles of that far-off summer, but I had not fought in the shield wall. "Tomorrow," I thought, "tomorrow." And like Odda, I wanted to see Alfred's army rescue us. But I knew there would be no rescue. "They outnumber us," Odda said again, "and some of my men have nothing but reaping hooks as weapons." "A reaping hook can kill," I said, though it was a stupid thing to say. I would not want to face a Dane if I carried nothing but a reaping hook. "How many have proper weapons?" I asked. "Harf," he guessed. "Then those men are our front ranks," I said, "and the rest pick up weapons from the enemy dead." I had no idea what I was speaking of, but only knew I must sound confident. Fear might work on a man, but confidence fights against fear. Odda paused again, gazing at the dark ships below. "Your wife and son are well," he said after a while. "Good. My son merely rescued her and prayed I was dead," I said. He shrugged. "Mildred lived with us, after her father's death, and my son became fond of her. He meant no harm, and he gave none." He held a hand out to me, and I saw in the small moonlight that he offered me a leather purse. "The rest of the bride price," he said. "Keep it, Lord," I said, "and give it to me after the battle. And if I die, give it to Mildred."